Hey, you for real? I'm asking you to middle a diamond for me here. Now, all I want from my end is 8,000.
What I'm saying to you is you should give it to somebody that don't know any better, because that's a fugazi, all right?
That's a fugazi? How do you know it's a fugazi? You looked at it for 2 seconds.
Well, it's a fake.
And we're recording. It's like a reunion with my old buddy over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's good to be with you again, Jimmy.
It is, man. You're the best.
No, you are.
Well,
you make me the best. You make me look good.
Look at you. Look at you.
You do. It's all in the editing. It's all in the questions, man.
Well, you know, I don't ask questions. We just shoot the shit like we're sitting down having L&B, you know?
Yeah. L&B.
Yeah. That was good times.
That was like your almost a religious experience going to that place.
It's ridiculous. But now, if people do not know who I'm speaking to right now, this is my friend.
And they probably don't, so go ahead.
Well, they're going to find out. Well, you know what it is? A lot of, like, so many people obviously know your work. But this is Mr. John Caglione Jr. He is an Academy Award-winning makeup and effects artist with a resume that is second to none. And I'm going to put it out there. I posted it on the Mission Statements group on Facebook that I was recording with you. And I wrote like a kind of like, not really a long thing, but a little blah, blah, blah. And I wrote it at the end. I said, a super down to earth legend. And it's the truth.
Well, you know, I'm just the makeup guy, man. I mean, it's not like rocket science, you know?
It might not be rocket science, but what you
we're a service organization here, you know?
Is that what you want to call yourself?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, listen.
That's what we're doing.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're service to the producers, director, and the actors, you know? It's like...
But you bring a specific amazing skill in order to make these things happen.
Well, you're very kind. At least I try. I'm trying.
Well, keep doing what you're doing, because you're doing
Thank you, man. Thank you. Well, I got to keep trying, because this is all I know how to do.
Right. So, listen.
I kind of put all my eggs in one basket, Jimmy.
But, listen, if there's any carryover from the other podcast that I did, I had you on. You were episode 232. This one's relatively new. This is episode 21. But
wow.
Yeah, it's relatively new, but I don't put them out every week. I put them out every 2-3 weeks. It's a lot less stressful for me, even though I didn't even need to be stressed for the other one. But I get like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
If there is any people that spill over, you know, from the other one, then they might have heard some of the things we'll talk about or whatever. But we spoke about it even in person when we, you know, me and Nikki, we met you and your lovely wife out on Long Island. You met at Spumoni Gardens, and we started bullshitting, not even just about your profession, but a lot of other things.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to do it again sooner rather than later. And I'm not just saying that because I know where you live, John.
I'm glad. There's not too many that do.
Right. You know? Yeah, no, me neither. Same here.
I'm glad you know where I live.
Yeah. So, but you have a very, very, I'm going to say it's a story that wouldn't happen in today's day and age as far as how you got into the business. You know, I know the story, so I'm not going to speak for you. So yeah. I guess just maybe if you want to just touch on just to let the people that are watching and listening know how you got your foot in the door, which is incredible to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I wrote a fan letter to a famous makeup guy. I mean, it's just that simple. I found a magazine, and in the magazine was not the makeup guy's address, but it was the address for the Linda Blair fan club because it was about The Exorcist. You know, because that movie like scorched my brain
when everyone of our generation from back then, it damaged us.
So you know, yes.
Yes.
It damaged me so badly that this is what I do now. You know? Like, you know, I had to know immediately. But I wrote a fan letter to the Linda Blair fan club in Hollywood, not knowing where the genius makeup artist Dick Smith lived.
Right.
And I wrote it to the Linda Blair fan club at Warner Brothers Studios in Hollywood and put my phone number in there and some questions, and I drew a picture of Dick Smith on the envelope. And somebody, some very nice person, forwarded that one letter to Dick Smith's house, where he worked out of his basement in Larchmont, New York.
Wow.
Which I was living in upstate New York at the time. Mm-hmm. So he was only like almost 150 miles away from my house. So he called me on the phone.
On a landline. It's crazy.
He called me on a landline. I was playing football in the street with my buddies, and my mother yells, "Johnny, Dick Smith's on the phone." And I'm like,
that's insane. You must have been flipping out in your head. You must have been so nervous.
It's like having the Beatles call your house. You know, like, this is what I just, you know, kind of set my mind on doing monster makeup back then. You know, yeah. I was just like so into it. And so it was like having, like, if you want to be a rock star and you pick up the guitar, it's like Jimi Hendrix is calling my house.
Sure. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's the equivalent.
It's a miracle, man.
Your mom yells out the window that Dick Smith is on the phone. It's crazy. Like, a story like that would never happen today at all.
No.
At all. It's just the world is just completely different.
Well, it's all emails now and texts and, you know, and everyone's on Instagram. So you could, you know, Dick Smith would be on Instagram today probably.
Sure.
So you private message him, and if he gets back to you. But back in those days, there was no Google or computers or cell phones.
You couldn't track where your mail, what your stamp is going. You don't know if it got there, if it gets returned to you, okay? But it's just like, you're just like a message in a bottle. Just, all right, it goes out and whatever
happens. Exactly. That's what I tell people. It was like being stranded on a deserted island.
Yeah.
And then putting a note in a bottle and throwing it in the ocean.
Yeah.
And the ocean liner happens to go by the USS Dick Smith. In my case, and I'm saved, you know.
Yeah, and he took you under his wing.
Yeah, he did.
And you were how old?
I was 15, going on 16, somewhere in there. Yeah, that's insane. Yeah. So, and you know, he was the most. I mean, I'm in my 60s now, and of all the people I've known, except my wife and my loved ones, he was the most generous person. I mean, he really built my career.
Yeah.
You know, he recommended me to Saturday Night NBC when they were looking for an apprentice right out of high school. They called Dick Smith and he said, "I got this guy, Johnny." So I went down, I did a makeup for the guy at NBC. I brought a friend, I did a whole prosthetic makeup because I figured that's my shot at the brass ring. If I don't grab this.
Sure.
So I prepared a whole makeup for the, just to meet the head of the makeup department at NBC. And I got hired. I got hired that day.
That's so awesome. And you worked on some of the original Coneheads.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, with Dan Aykroyd. And I saw you posted it today that I didn't know, which I really didn't think that hard into Saturday Night Live, but you post something today from 1977. You're doing makeup on the damn Bee Gees, man.
Yes.
From 77, Saturday Night Fever, bro.
That was the time, man. Yeah.
I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is like the height of the Bee Gees. And you're like doing that.
Yes, the height of disco.
Yeah.
Yeah, Studio 54, the disco, New York, New York. You know, 2001 is Space Odyssey in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, these clubs were going at that time. It was like polyester suits and the whole thing. It was like I tell people, when I was started at NBC, if you see the movie Taxi Driver,
sure,
that's New York City in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Scorsese captured it beautifully.
Perfectly.
So that's that moment, you know, making up the Bee Gees at NBC. You know, I'd walk down to my apartment, my sublet on 33rd Street, and I would be walking by hookers on 42nd Street, getting propositioned in Times Square. And it was so, what an incredible time to be in New York.
Just amazing. Yeah. As you're saying that, because you know me, and we've had these conversations in a roundabout way, but you're saying, you know, you walk it through Times Square and stuff, and it just pops in my head that you worked on it's I don't know if it's a favorite movie of mine, but it definitely holds a little place in my heart. And it's a terrible movie, but it's so good that it's bad, like one of those type of things. You worked on Basket Case.
Hell yeah.
And I love that movie. Like, I became friendly with Kevin Van Hettenrick, the guy who played Dwayne Bradley. And there's, you know, he's walking through Times Square with the basket in his hand. Yeah. And the guy comes over and asks him, there's like 95,000 drugs he names off. And it's just such a dirty, dirty city. And it's so good. Yeah. And doing this whole exploration film location thing that I do, which spawned this podcast, basically. And I've gone and researched and found several locations from that movie, like Dwayne Bradley's old loft, where Belial is, you know, hanging him from the sign, from the Hotel Broseland sign. Like, I found that. A lot of it is still the same. The actual theaters where he's walking from. Like, I found so many locations to several movies that you've worked on. Like,
yeah,
several. The Cotton Club inside the Empire. Well,
you found one the other day where we were shooting The Hunger, right?
Yes,
where they were just going to lunch at a restaurant.
It was David Bowie. They're sitting in. They're in
Queens.
At the Neptune Diner, right. And I'm sitting in the exact spot that Bowie was sitting in.
Right.
And you worked on The Hunger with Bowie.
I helped Dick Smith put on some of the old age makeups on David Bowie in New York for a week in New York with them. And he was the night, you know, to be with Dick Smith was, that was unbelievable. But Bowie was so nice, man, you know, like alarming, like, you know, he wanted me to bring in pictures of my kids because my kids were young, my two daughters. And, oh, bring them in, you know, I want to show you my pictures. And that's the way the guy was, you know, just.
Yeah. So a humble, down-to-earth guy, like a regular guy.
Real deal, yeah. Just incredible.
Yeah, it's always refreshing when you meet somebody like that, that could you wouldn't be surprised if certain people have an ego, like an above-you type thing, but it's so great when people are just humble and down-to-earth who are, like, super famous or, you know what I mean? I've met a handful, a couple that honestly, there's only like one that I was just kind of like, I kind of wish I didn't meet this person. Oh. Linda Blair.
Was she really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm disappointed, man.
Me too, man. Because listen, I used to go, me and Nikki and my daughter, we used to go to horror conventions all the time. And not everybody is horror that's there. You know, I've met, Martin Cove from The Karate Kid. You know, I met all these people. And, I mean, Regan McNeil from The Exorcist is an iconic figure in horror. I mean, it's undeniable. And I grew up watching it. I'm still disturbed by it if I even watch it. My daughter's not even scared. She looks at it and she tells me, like, Dad, she just has a potty mouth. That's what she tells me. I'm like, how are you not destroyed from this movie? Wrong with you? Kids nowadays, she's like, it's like she just has a potty mouth. I'm like, I got it. It's very strange. So there was a couple of times, I think three times that Linda Blair was at conventions that I was at. And one of them, because my daughter wanted to meet her. Yeah. And I have no, and she's not cheap, she charges you like $100 for an 8x10 and an autograph and an extra like $40 to take a selfie with your own camera with her. So she's not cheap, you know what I mean? And her line is always around the damn block.
Sure.
And she just has this attitude, like, I just don't like being here and doing this.
Oh.
It's this attitude. And I swear, John, I wanted to give her my money on three occasions. Like, take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And after the third time, I think it was the third time was when my daughter was with me and I'm watching her and she's watching her and she's like, Dad, like, what's wrong with her? I was like, she has like this nasty attitude, right? She's like, yeah. She's like, I don't even think I even want to meet her. So at this point, like, yeah. I won't even give her $5 on principle.
Right. Oh, that's
three times. And I gave it three times. Three times is a charm. Three shots. Yeah. I would have no problem. I had money tucked on the side, no problem. Because there's always the list of all the people that are at the conventions. I'm like, okay, I want to meet this person, this person, this person. And there's always, and I, okay, I budget like my, I always spend like $1,000 more than I intend on. But right. But I'm like, okay, we're definitely going to meet Linda Blair. Or at least try.
Right.
Three times I tried. I wanted to. But there was something in me, I just couldn't do it. I was kind of thinking, like, you're an actress, or at least were an actress. At least pretend like you want to be there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're from California. You definitely got flown in round trip from the convention. You are staying in a hotel, and it's probably not a shitty hotel. And your line is wrapped around the block, and you're making money hand over fist for a signature on a piece of paper from a movie that came out in the 70s.
Yeah.
Maybe pretend like, wow, I can't actually believe that my legacy is still going.
I wonder where that attitude comes from. I wonder why people develop that kind of attitude. Because,
you know,
when you're saying that, in my experience, like the total flip side of that, an actor, Johnny Depp. Have you ever heard stories about Johnny Depp?
Only from you.
Well, if I'm repeating myself.
No. See, me and you, nobody else has heard these. So it's fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, Johnny, I worked with him two times, you know, Donnie Brasco in a film that he directed with Brando in it. And Johnny Depp, and I don't know if it's his upbringing or life experience, you know, it's got to be all of the above. But when he's on a film, after he finishes a 12, 13, 14 hour day, he meets all of his fans.
Hmm.
And I would, like on Donnie Brasco, every night, and he worked a lot. He's almost in the entire movie. He's almost in every scene. He would sign every autograph and take every picture with everybody. And like there would be there was a crowd. He would disappear in the middle of it. And 2.5 hours later, he'd be like the last few people.
Consistently. That's so huge to somebody like me. And I'll be the first one to say, I'm a nerd when it comes to certain things like that. Yeah. And, you know, especially things that connect me to movies and like me when I was a kid, like there's a lot of things that I take from these things. And somebody that like that, who is down to earth and has time for his fans. That speaks volumes to me. Just from that, I have a ton of more respect from Johnny Depp.
I marveled at it, you know, watching him on both films. It never failed, you know? And he never, like, blew anyone off. It's like, oh, I'm tired. That never happened with him. And I don't know where that is. You know, maybe it's his – he was a musician before he became an actor.
Yeah.
So maybe it's that rock star thing. I don't know, where you're like, these are your fans. They come to see you play.
Right.
So maybe that transitions into the film business where he – sees his audiences coming to movie theaters and watching his films.
Sure.
They know where their bread's buttered, you know?
Right. It could be that thing that's in him that unfortunately some people don't have. It's simple and it's just gratitude.
Well, you work a lot with bands. You go out and see bands. You do that still, right?
Yeah. Most part. I kind of slowed down, but I go have my peaks and valleys. I'm sure I'll be out there more again.
Yeah, but do you see a lot of that where the fans are waiting backstage or outside?
What's the dog's name? It's fine.
Oh, that's Gavin and Murphy.
Okay.
They're two Australian shepherds. The wolves.
Nice.
All right, Gavin. Sorry, man.
Listen, that happens. It's fine. It's cool.
I work out of my house like I've been doing for most of my career. So, you know, this is, you know.
Hey, listen, it's fine. It's all good. But
my daughter's here. My youngest daughter is here. She just drove in from New Jersey.
Nice. Where in Jersey?
She's over in, where are you, Nicole? In Union City? Yeah, come here. Say hi to Jimmy.
No,
she doesn't have any makeup. Well, you came to the right place. I'm a makeup guy. I'll help you. I'll hook you up.
I'll hook you up.
It's my daughter.
Hello. How are you?
You too. Good. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
We're actually
on right
now. Hi, Jim. Awesome.
Where's Helen?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to see you again. We all have to hang out again.
Oh, let's do it, man.
I'm dragging you to the Warren Cemetery.
I don't know about that.
I'm sorry. We're just gonna kidnap you, and we're just gonna tell you we're going somewhere else. There.
Helen, it looks like I'm growing your head out of my shoulder.
Yes, it's like a Belial.
Nice to see you, Jim.
Sorry.
Nice to see you too, Helen.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Yeah.
All right.
See, that's what makes these things fun and cool. There's nothing scripted here, John.
Oh, God bless you, man. Thank you.
So all right, come on. So, Donnie Brasco, and I'm just gonna put it out there. I'm not even gonna try to segue. Like, you're like Al Pacino's guy.
For the most part, yeah, yeah.
And I won't tell your story, but I will lead into it so you can tell it in your own words, because I already have it in my
head. Oh, you tell it. Come on, you tell it better.
I can't tell your whole story. It's just you. All right, me and you were eating at L&B, and I had mentioned, you know, there's got to be a certain time frame, and I'm sure it happens often where you stop and you're like, wow, like I'm in the presence of these people and this, that, and the other thing. Yeah. And there was a situation that you found yourself in that I got all sorts of excited when you talk. I'm like, that is the most coolest shit ever. You were taking a break or whatever on a Pacino movie. I could be wrong, but it might have been maybe Insomnia or something like that. I'm not sure, but you mentioned the movie. I don't remember that part. Yeah. But you were walking past his Al Pacino's trailer.
Uh-huh.
And he called you in. And you sat down on the couch next to him, and he's flipping the TV station.
This was the last big show I did. This was Hunters, the TV series.
Okay.
On Amazon, yeah.
All right, and he's flipping the stations around, and then what happens?
It's Scarface comes on, Tony Montana, man. And it's surreal. And he knows I'm getting a kick out of it, you know?
I'm bugging out right now thinking about it. So to be in that position, all right. He's flipping the station around.
Yeah.
Scarface comes on, and he leaves the movie on, right?
Yes.
Which is awesome. And then you sit there, you're watching Scarface, and you look to your right, and you're sitting next to fucking Tony Montana.
Yes, and I'm, like, actually, like, loving it. I want to hug him, you know? And he knows it. He knows it. I'm like, this is fucking great, man.
It is. Like, that, what a...
Look,
it's just the whole universe and how everything, and this is where you're finding yourself in that moment. I would have been flipping out.
And I was too, everybody, you know. I mean, we love movies, you know.
Yeah.
And I love Al. So he's really helped me out big time, you know. So it's like, it's all that in the mix. It really is.
You met him, the first thing that you did with Pacino was Dick Tracy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you won your Academy Award for?
Yes, with Doug Drexler. He and I won the Oscar together that night. Yeah.
And then from Dick Tracy on, I mean, your IMDb, you have so many things that you've done with Pacino. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, he's been a great, really. I mean, I don't know how it works, you know, Al, but. That'll never happen. You know, that happened only with one time in my career with one actor, you know.
And like, what an actor for that to happen with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, man. Just unbelievable.
Yeah. You
know? We're still in touch. I saw him at in New York. He came in to do this big thing with Tribeca. They did a screening of Heat again.
Oh.
Michael Mann digitally remastered it or did something with it.
I watched it again. I watched it like last week again.
Yeah, such a slick movie, man. Yeah,
and once we became friends and we've had conversations about these things, I'll watch a movie, and while Heat is on, the whole scene with the legendary makeup that Michael Mann didn't even want to go near or touch with Danny Trejo when he's
Which
you did that makeup.
Well, I did a lot of different variations for Mike. I did, we took a mold of Danny Trejo's face and I did like five different sculptures of this beat up makeup because they were going to really show it. Michael Mann was going to really feature it. And I had a meeting with Michael with all these different sculptures on Danny Trejo's life cast. And Michael Mann kind of mixed and matched what he liked. And then I just took those elements and made a process to makeup. But I was really nervous because I knew that De Niro would be like very close to the makeup.
Right.
And I'd heard that De Niro's very like detail orientated, you know, and if he's looking at a makeup that doesn't look good to him or doesn't look real, you know, I was like, that was, you know, once we had decided the makeup, I knew Michael Mann was going to be good with it. But with De Niro that close to Danny Trejo's face. And I remember that we did the rehearsal and Danny laid in the spot. We dressed it with blood and De Niro was doing the rehearsal. And he just looked up at me and he went, you know, he just went, you know, like that De Niro face. Like,
yeah,
this looks good. I was like, thank you, God.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. You know?
Yeah.
But if it doesn't work for him, then we got a problem, you know?
Right. Of course. And did you see, because you ran through my mind again. Did you see it's I watched it on Tubi, but it might be somewhere else. It's called Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo.
No.
All right. Do you have the Tubi app? Tubi.
Yes.
It's on Tubi. That's where I watched it. Now, Okay. Now, if people don't really, I'm not going to get into the whole thing. I'll make it a short story. But, you know, Danny, you know, he grew up surrounded by crime in LA. Yeah. This and that. He did jail time. He was armed robber and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it goes through his career where he's on Runaway Train and then this and that. And then eventually they go to Heat. And they talk about that makeup.
Kidding. Wow.
Yes. And I want to say that it is his sister. I want to say it's his sister in the interview that they're talking to. And she said that knowing, or it might be his daughter or his sister, one or the other. It's really neither here nor there. Somebody's close, I'm a family member. And she was saying that knowing, that's why I want to say it's the daughter, knowing her dad and his past, how his life could have legitimately ended up the way he looked in Heat. And it was so realistic looking to his daughter that it like traumatized her, for lack of a better word.
Holy cow, I didn't know that.
It's called Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo. It is phenomenal.
I'll check it out. Thanks for the heads up, Jimmy. Yeah. I ran into Danny a few years back. Maybe 5 years back, they were doing. Chris Nolan was going to host a Heat screening with Michael Mann was there and Pacino at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and I happened to be in L.A. and I went with a friend of mine that night, and I bumped into Danny, and you know we hadn't seen each other, you know, since that film, and he told me that his mother can't look at that, you know, it's like it bothers her.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, I felt bad.
But that's like, that's a fact, how awesome and realistic it was. It's like, it's incredible shit, man.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Well, hey, listen, thank God, you know, it all worked out.
That's
what a great film to be on. What a great film.
Oh, my God. Legends. The cast alone is insane. And last summer, I went on this really, really long road trip, like 8 days, almost 3,000 miles I drove, hitting all kinds of locations and buildings.
Right, I remember you, yeah.
Yeah, yes. So this next summer coming up, it's kind of in the works. I'm not sure exactly my whole route, but I'm going to – a lot of it is going to be in California. And I have a whole bunch of filming locations from Heat
that I need to – Yeah.
Like old spots like the bank robbery, the where the armored truck spot.
Right across from the Benavent, what is it? The Benavent, what is it? The hotel, the Bonaventure Hotel.
Yeah.
It's right there. It's right across the street.
Yep. The whole spot with all the whole shootout. Like I have so many. There's one on Flower Street.
Yes.
Is the bank where Tom Sizemore is walking out with the glasses and he's walking out with the big bag. Like that whole shootout is all, I have everything mapped out. Like the whole armored car heist in the beginning. Like I have all that stuff. The hotel room where De Niro kills Wangro. I have all of that.
Yes, down by the airport, right?
Yes.
We shot it in the Hilton right there, I think. It was one of those hotels.
Yeah. Yeah. I have it in my computer, the actual room that it happened in. Like I had the actual, it's like 14 or something or 40 something. I had the room number and everything. I'm going to go in there and get the shots of De Niro in the hallway. Yeah. Where he's like leading, like with the flashlight, you know, when he pulls the fire alarm, like that whole scene, like, I can't wait, man.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, that shootouts, you know, the shootout, I think we shot that over like 8 weekends or 10 weekends. We could only get in there from like Saturday morning to Sunday night.
Yeah.
And we had to wrap and then do the rest of the movie. And it was just a feat in filmmaking that we were able to like shoot a certain amount of it and then wrap it all up and then come back and redress it and do more and then close it up and do it. And it was just like, it was amazing. Just technically.
Yeah, what an insane shootout. Like, how many bullets were shot? Now, it's insane.
But, you know, people look at it and they think, oh, well, that was just all done in, like, in one weekend.
Oh, no
way. It's downtown L.A. It's, you know, you can only get in there on the weekends.
Yeah, so it's the middle of the street in downtown L.A. That's crazy.
And it had to be matched over eight or ten weekends. It's, you know, it was just a feat of filmmaking.
Yeah.
And it stitches together like it all happened a lot right there in that, you know, what, 15, 10 minutes or whatever?
Yeah.
You know,
long shootout. It's a good solid 10 minutes long, solid.
Yeah. Well, that film was really incredible to work on. It was a turning point in my career because up until around that point, I was just known for a lot of character and effects makeup.
Right.
And then I came into Heat and I was the department head of beauty makeup and special effects makeups and doing Al's makeup and the principal cast, except De Niro, except I had Kenny Diaz who did these beautiful tattoos on everyone. And he was my key, but that was a turning point in my career where I just didn't do monsters and prosthetics anymore. I could do a department and an entire legitimate picture.
Did you do Ashley Judd?
Yes.
Wow. And Val Kilmer.
And Amy Brenneman and
John Voight.
John Voight. Well, Kenny Diaz did his makeup and did a beautiful job. Really beautiful. You know, Kenny Diaz, I should tell you about him.
Sure.
He was Rob Bottin's right-hand guy on The Thing.
Really?
Yeah, and he was Mickey Rourke's personal makeup artist for years.
Wow.
You know, and did all of Mickey's early films. And Kenny is just, he was, I think he was nominated for an Academy Award with Dick Smith for Dad, the old age makeup on Jack Lemmon.
Really?
So I had this guy as my second makeup artist on Heat. So, you know, how could you miss with someone like that? You know?
That's incredible, dude.
So a big shout out to Ken Diaz, man. The guy is like a monster makeup guy. You know, just great, great makeup artist.
There was something that I seen. It might have been on that on that Trejo documentary because the actor Eddie Bunker, you know who Eddie Bunker is?
Yes.
Eddie Bunker, I knew him as Mr. Blue from Reservoir Dogs. But but I've seen Runaway Train, and he's in Runaway Train with the bald head. And that guy is the guy that basically showed Danny Trejo the ropes about Hollywood and being an actor.
Right.
So they were saying in one point or another in Heat with Trejo, they tried to make John Voight kind of based on the way Eddie Bunker really is.
Yes.
As an homage to Eddie Bunker.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah.
That's it.
Hey, little small little behind the scenes that not too many people know.
You sure you weren't around in the makeup trailer? When
I know. I'm telling you, I nerd out when it comes to like all these behind the scenes little, I guess, yeah, little fun facts. I don't know. I like all that stuff, man.
That's a fact. That's a fact, man. Yeah. Yeah, Eddie Bunker, that he was patterned after, absolutely.
Yeah, and that was the guy who, like, Danny Trejo basically gives all the credit for his career to Eddie Bunker.
Yeah, and what about John Voight's incredible performance?
I mean, unbelievable.
You know, I mean, yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, that whole movie's insane. And he wrote this. He put out a new book. It's Heat 2.
Yes.
Is there going to be another movie? That would be kind of awesome.
Yeah, I think there probably will be.
Good. Well, yeah, you need to, if Pacino was in it, because obviously Pacino survives.
Yeah, well, I don't know how old he is now. I don't know if it would fit, but maybe a prequel. Maybe go back a little bit, you know, in time.
How those guys, Johnny Keggs on the horn.
Yeah, oh yeah. Listen, I almost did another Michael Mann film. It almost worked out, but it didn't. I was going to do Ferrari, the movie with Michael Mann that he just finished. Over really? Italy. Yeah, I did some makeup. Oh, that looks cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's, you know.
Yeah, that's really nice, man.
Gee.
There it is.
There it is. And just by chance.
Manhunter, that's another Michael Mann film right there.
There you go. Yeah, you've worked on so much, man. Like, I've found spots from Chud that I hit, Unfaithful. You worked with Diane Lane, man, who has – it's, you know, she was Cherry Valance in The Outsiders, and without The Outsiders, right, over that house, this whole Delta Bravo thing wouldn't exist, and this whole podcast wouldn't exist. So wow. Diane Lane is actually like a weird little portion of all of this.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Strange. I don't know. It's just, you know, something. Donnie Brasco, legendary. I mean, the Cotton Club, even the Cotton Club, man. It's like, come on. It's...
Well, they just, you know, he recut the film. Have you seen the redo?
I haven't.
Oh, it's really great. It's really, you know, it was always meant to be like a 2 hour and 2 and 20 minute film. And yeah. I think the story goes, Orion made Coppola cut it to do it like in an hour and 40 minutes, which kills the story.
Right.
So Coppola just went back and recut it. And it's really, really amazing film to watch.
And there's another connection. Coppola did The Outsiders. Hence,
that's right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. What a great film. Pony Boy
Curtis. Well, I don't know if you know, you might know this, but Danny Boy, who this Delta Bravo DB is all based on, he owns the Curtis Brothers house. It's now the Outsiders House Museum in Tulsa.
I think I've seen that on your Facebook page or somebody's Facebook page.
Yeah, it was probably mine. Yeah, Nikki's. Yeah. We went there last summer. He bought the house right across the street. Because the house is a museum. There's not even running water in it. But right across the street, he bought a house, and he calls it the Greaser Hideout. And it's an Airbnb. So if you want to go there, you rent the house for the whole day or the night or the weekend or however long you want. And it's just – Tulsa's an awesome spot. So it's like every road trip – since that last road trip I did, I never did anything like that before. But once we were out there on the road, it's like every year now, like when my vacation comes up in the summer, I'm going on a road trip. And depending on the spot in the country that I decide to go, if it's within reach, I will always stop in Tulsa because that's technically Delta Bravo headquarters.
Right. Yeah. Sure, man. Sure. I think I've seen that post. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. He did some amazing stuff out there in Tulsa. Yeah. I never thought that I'd be ever saying that either. Like, yeah, like ever. It's the truth. Like, some of the things I say now, it's like, wow, it's.
Am I getting older? What's the story?
Yeah, what's happening? Like, what's going on? To me? Well, you know, it's all positive and it's all good stuff, man. So I love it. I love all this stuff. And, you know, I've always been like a movie nerd and a horror nerd. So all this stuff, it just goes.
I know.
It's just a big. It combines everything, you know. It's like I find myself literally standing in the middle of the actual house where they filmed the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. Oh my
God. And it's exactly the same. And it's a restaurant now, but they were closed when we got there. But the owners came out and I showed them what we were doing and they were like, oh, just walk around. And it was like I had free reign of the Texas Chainsaw, the Sawyer house. I'm like,
Wow.
Walking up the same stairs that Leatherface is chasing Marilyn Burns up, and I'm looking around, right. And I had chills. And yes. I even told Nikki, I was standing there, and I was like, this might sound fucking crazy, but I'm having like a moment right now, like in my body, like this is, I'm in the set of this movie. How am I here right now? You know what I mean? Like, and I find myself doing that a lot. Like, I know I'm going to be on Flower Street in downtown LA taking a picture of where Pacino is up against the light pole with the giant machine gun. And I'm going to be standing right in the middle of where that shootout happened. And it might not mean shit to somebody who's walking past every day there, but to me, it just means something because I'm a nerd like that. And I'll say it all day long. I don't care. It's fun.
Thank God.
Yeah, man. I could be doing that worse stupid shit than trying to find where Al Pacino stood for a few minutes in a movie. You know? That's true.
No, listen, man, when I go into the city every once in a while and I hit a spot where, you know, it brings back good memories, you know, just even walking around 30 Rock, you know, like being, you know, 18 and walking around and just revisiting those places, you know, and it puts you in the place, like going to Texas. Where was the Texas Chainsaw House? Where is that?
It was originally in, well, it's in... Oh, Jesus Christ. It's in Texas, obviously. It's in... Give me a second.
Is it like up near Oklahoma? Is it up like that?
No. I'm going to find it right now. But they originally... They took the house and they actually cut it into like seven different pieces. And they moved it. It's 1010... King Court, Kingsland, Texas.
Kingsland.
But they literally cut the house up and they moved it like two towns over and they put it back. I'm talking, John, meticulous. Like I could take a random screenshot from the movie of a random room that they're in.
Right.
And I did it with my location stuff. And I would take a picture of the room, how it is now, and it would be, I'm talking down to the thin little window molding and the panel, like everything is exact, meticulous, exact.
Right.
Like, it's unbelievable. The attention to detail, what they did to that house is impressive as hell.
Yeah, man. It's that movie just, oh my gosh.
There's hardly any blood at all. It's all suggested. Right. And it's just gritty and disgusting and creepy. We stayed at the original, when they pull the green van up to the gas station in the movie.
Right.
And that's down in Bastrop, Texas. But somebody kind of like what Danny did with the Outsiders house, someone had like the vision. They found that gas station. They refurbished the entire thing. They have horror conventions there. It's a huge gift shop. And behind it, they built like five cabins. So the first real night, we flew into Austin and we stayed like literally, we slept like 2 hours in this little hotel just to shower and put our stuff down. Right. And then we woke up first thing in the morning, we hit a whole bunch of locations. And the first real night, we stayed in one of the cabins at the gas station from the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Wow.
It's like the first thing in the morning, I open up my door and I'm like, Leatherface was chasing this poor girl here. And they're like, I'm like, this is so cool. Yeah. I ate a barbecue sandwich from, because it even says we slaughter gas station, just like the movie. You can buy barbecue sandwiches there. I'm like, this is amazing. It's amazing.
Oh, man.
I was such a nerd for 8 days. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah. It makes you feel like you're like a child again, man. You're
100%, dude. Yes.
You're in the picture.
Yeah. I'm on set here. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, even just the opening scene where the guy gets in the van, and, you know, my grandfather makes good head cheese.
Head cheese. Oh, yeah. The hitchhiker. That guy is one of the most in movies, period. That guy is so disturbing in that scene.
Oh, man.
With the birthmark on his face, and he hurts himself with the straight razor, and just his mannerisms. It's so creepy and like, so realistic, man.
It's unsettling already. You're like
very unsettling.
You're feeling like motion. At least I did motion sickness.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, you know, what's going to happen? You know,
yeah.
And just the whole thing, the organic sense of shooting it, like you're in the van with these kids. And
yeah. Yeah. Oh, Daniel Pearl shot that.
And right.
I actually spoke to him. I had him on my old podcast. And we spoke all about that. It was like, it was 110 degrees in Texas and
right.
in a van with no air condition. We're cramped in there. It was like, it was such an experience to do. And that was his first thing that he ever did. Now he's done like 800 music videos. He's friends with he's done so much stuff. It's ridiculous. But
yeah, they caught lightning in a bottle in that film, man.
Yeah, they absolutely did. Yeah. One of the stops we did too is the very opening scene of that movie where there's the corpse that they dug up and she's stuck up on one of the monuments in the cemetery, like right in the beginning. Like that's called the Baghdad Cemetery in Leander, Texas. And we went there and I'm standing right in front of the actual monument. I'm like, this is so surreal. It's a real place. It's not even on a set nowhere. It's like, you can go and visit this place, which is awesome.
Listen, man, I can share your emotions about things. Like, it just reminded me when we were shooting Dick Tracy at night, like if we had a night scene and we were done cleaning up all the makeup and stuff, me and Drexler and a few of the makeup guys would go up to the Psycho House.
Oh, my God.
At Universal at night, you know?
Dude.
And just like.
Bucket list.
Oh.
Bucket list.
Yeah, man. That was, you know, we would just creep each other out just being in you go in the house at night, you know, and just walk around the grounds and
you walk up those staircase
yes.
and yeah, like talk about iconic film stuff. And I know it's a landmark, they can't touch it, it'll always be there, like but I that is one place I will have that same kind of moment.
You will.
You know, because I mean, I believe the second Psycho 2, I believe, was filmed in there as well.
We were like you, kids in a candy store, man.
Yeah.
Like when we weren't shooting Dick Tracy on the back lot, we were like checking out the Spartacus staircase, you know, like where
crazy.
You know, it was just like, here we are.
Yeah.
We're here. You know, it's like unbelievable. Man.
Unreal.
And we were from New York. Like, that was my first Hollywood picture. So it was like to be on the back lot at Universal, to like have the keys to the kingdom and walk around at night.
Yeah.
You know, and you could like look at everything you ever wanted to look at.
Yeah. And not like on a guided tour, like you could just walk around. That's the best ever, man. I'm not a fan of guided tours, but I just want to go and do my thing. So that's like,
yeah,
that's definitely high up on the bucket list.
I know how you feel. I do. Yeah. I total geeked out. Geeked out. Yeah.
Love that shit. Love it, man. and it's crazy because I look, you know, I took a couple of notes, obviously, because I'll forget. So, and I'm not going to go through every single thing you've done because we'd be here for 9 hours. But it's like certain things like Waco, the TV series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's funny because the situation isn't funny, but on my last road trip, I was standing in the rebuilt church on the original concrete slab of the Branch Davidian compound, speaking with David Koresh's replacement pastor.
Wow.
With Nikki. It's like, it's like 7 o'clock on a Monday morning and I'm on the Waco. Why am I here right now?
Wow. That is surreal, man.
Surreal shit, man. And, it's just one of those moments, like, how did I get here? And I'm like, well, I planned this, and it just worked out. But never in a million years in certain places that I've been, only because of this whole Delta Bravo thing, which was always an interest of mine way before there was even social media or this whole team thing. It was always something like, A, I've always been a movie geek. Two, I always use this as a reference. I'm watching the original of first ever Friday the 13th as a little kid. 5-6 years old, and I'm watching it, and I always wonder, I'm like, well, this is most likely a real lake. It's probably not called Camp Crystal Lake, but that's a real lake, and I wonder what it's really called, and I wonder if I can go there one day and really see where this was filmed. I'm having this thought as a little kid, Hence, yeah. I've been there a half a dozen times since, but, and then it just, this team thing, it gave it that spark to actually be able to do something that I've always been interested in without ever really knowing or understanding it. You know what I mean?
So that's now, great that you're doing it, man. That's
so now, great. It's like, right. So it's like, oh, and it's just, it, you know, it's just funny how it worked out that it's like Danny Boy from the rap group House of Pain, you know, Jump Around and all that. So it's like, it's right. So funny that it's him. And when I was 18, that song was everywhere and I was always a fan. Now I'm friends with him. It's just very weird how all that happened.
Well, you're willing it to happen. You're putting it out in the universe. It responds, man.
Something, but it was just something that I genuinely was interested in. Like, I hit up a lot of mafia stuff and true crime stuff. And
right.
It's just always something that I've been interested in, regardless if there was this whole place to put these things or not. It just so happens that, and we always say, it's like that the picture at the end where I superimpose the old with the new, that's just the end result of.
Yeah, I love that. I love what you do with that, man.
Yeah, that's just the end result though of a lot of planning and mapping out and searching and then putting in that effort to actually go to these places and look for these places. And there's so much that happens behind the scenes that you can't tell in that one picture. Like this whole, you know, this, I, like I said, I took an 8-day road trip. We drove 3,000 miles in 8 days. I think it was 175 pictures that I superimposed on each other.
Right.
Like 175 different ones in 8 days and 3,000 miles later. And it's like, amazing. I want to do it all over again.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's just fun. And it's just it's something that I always
have. You're manifesting it, man. That's what you're doing. You're going out and you're doing it. You know, yeah. It's actually becoming a physical. It's yeah. no longer the dream.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I'm never bored.
Yeah.
I'm never bored. I always have something to do. I wish I had more time. It's like I was saying to Helen when she popped on before, like we're going to drag her to the Stepney Cemetery to go see the Warren's graves. The only reason why I even know I've been there before is because of this whole thing.
Yeah.
I want to see the Warren's Museum. And then, all right, once we're there, all right, well, what else is around in that area? And we just go to all different spots. We sit in a diner that we never would ever be in if we weren't doing this. We meet nice people. We see different things. It's just getting out and just getting out of the neighborhood and just doing.
Listen, man, some people like plan a vacation to Tahiti.
Right.
You know, and they do it.
Yeah.
Your vacation is going into these places that excited you as a child.
Yeah.
You know, this is your vacation spots.
100%.
You know? And you feel the fulfillment that someone would feel sitting on the beach in you know, Fiji.
Right.
You know.
If I ever went to Fiji, I would, like, let's just say, I would be like, all right, well, what was filmed in Fiji? Like, I wouldn't be able to lay on the beach. I'd be like, listen, I got to go halfway up that mountain, and then I see that mountain peak. I have to be over here because the peak is, and some right. stupid episode of some show was filmed here, and that's what I would want to do.
That's great, man.
What I do. 100%.
Love it.
Where I go, it's almost like a sickness. We'll be watching something. And even Nikki, she'll be like, where'd they film that? I'm like, yeah. I don't know. I would pause it. I'll go into my thing. Film locations for, let's just say, Poltergeist 3, which you were.
Yes.
You know, yes. And I'll work, okay, this is in Chicago. This is in where?
Yeah.
Like, that's too far. Maybe one day we'll get there, you know?
You know, I have kind of the same kind of sickness. You know, it's like I'll watch old movies with Helen at night. And it's like, you know, all the actors are not like living anymore. And all the like the not the principal cast, but secondary cast. And I don't know if this is sick, and I don't know if I should actually say this on national television, but I go to find a grave.
So do I.
And
listen, I'll top that. I have an account. I put in my email and my password. I have an account for Find the Grave because if there's something wrong, I can edit it and correct people. I was on Find the Grave yesterday, John.
Were you?
I go to cemeteries the time, man.
But they not only tell you, you know, where they are, which is like, you know, Lon Chaney is over. And, you know, like I always look at Lon Chaney Sr.'s grave. But, you know, if they tell you the story.
Where is he?
He's in Forest Lawn, I think. Isn't he like in the mausoleum, like up in the top?
Really?
Somewhere. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's in like one of the marble vaults at the top somewhere. Yeah. But they tell you, I find it great, they tell you the life, you know, when the death, what happened in the end. And, you know, you get like a little synopsis of the person that you're watching on television.
Yeah.
And it's always...
I know all about Find the Grave, buddy.
I'm sorry. It's such
no, a- it's fine. It's like, oh, Find the Grave, I was there yesterday. Like, I literally was.
And so, you know, saying that, I hope that somebody down the road will watch something I've done and say, you know, where's John Caglione, you know?
Right.
And, you know, maybe look me up and find
it. Yeah, look me up and go pay respects. And you know what? Like, I'll go pay respects, and I really do. I don't just go there just to take my – because I've gone to so many. There's probably about 80 different mobsters that I've gone. And I'll stand there for a minute in a moment of silence. I'll take a quick picture, and I'll go. Sometimes I'll leave a rock there or something like that, depending on who it is. But there's, you know, and it was just veering kind of off. Like, we went to we were up in North Jersey in Fort Lee. There was a couple of scenes in Goodfellas that was filmed there. So we went there, and I was like, you know what? I'm never really in North Jersey, so we just drove up there. And I'm like, all right. And so we're passing a couple of cemeteries. So I'm like, oh, well, what cemetery is that? And we see it. Okay, so we type it in, Find the Grave. And it just so happens, because I did a whole bunch of, because I do a lot of true crime stuff. And is it morbid? Yes. But then again, it's also history. And I don't glorify it in any way. But there was this whole, you know, the whole Son of Sam thing. You know what I mean? David Berkowitz. And then there was the Netflix thing, Sons of Sam, where we watched that. So I went, and so we looked in the cemetery and we looked up Find the Grave. And there was one of his victims was there, Stacy Moskowitz, who was the only one that was shot and killed in Brooklyn, and it was his last one. It was his last murder victim, and she was there, and we stopped in there, and I paid my respects to her, and then I was like, wow, and I never really thought about it. And then I go to I go to Google, and I've got a list of all the people that he murdered. And I looked, and I have this five more that I will go there and I will pay my respects to every one of his victims.
Right.
And I went to Find the Grave, and they're all right there. You can find them easily.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all there, man. Yeah, no, it's amazing, you know, place to go just to find out what people are, you know, and pay your respects.
That's right. You pay your respects to them. And there's a lot of people. It's like I found myself looking down and paying my respects to Bert Law, the Cowardly Lion.
Isn't he over in Brooklyn? Isn't he right off the end?
He's in Queens.
Jackie Robinson. Is he in Queens?
Yeah.
Is it the Jackie Robinson Parkway that you go? Is it the
theater? Yes. It's that whole cemetery belt right there.
And Houdini's over there.
Houdini is in. I can't pronounce it.
Weiss.
Yes. We've been to Houdini's. I'm looking at Bert Lahr. He's in a Jewish cemetery.
Yeah.
His real name was Irving Larhine, professionally known as Bert Lahr. Union Field Cemetery, Section 8 in Queens.
In Queens, right.
Yeah.
Wow.
What puts the ape in apricot?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, so it's like I was a kid. Who doesn't like The Wizard of Oz when you were a kid? I'm like, you know what? I want to go pay my respects. That's the Cowardly Lion, man. You know, amongst a million other things, but that's how I know him. So we're in the neighborhood. Let's go say what's up to the Cowardly Lion.
Yeah, God.
Yeah. The Wizard, who plays the Wizard, is in Greenwood. Like, that's
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I know all of these things, man. I go visit all these people.
And his name is, it's not Frank Morgan. It's like Morgan Sterners.
Yes. Whopperman.
Whopperman. Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
And his family has a plot there. Like,
yes. And you know what's funny? I don't know if it's funny or not. He's only like maybe 50 feet away from Crazy Joe Gallo.
No shit. Wow. Yep.
And Joe Gallo is buried next to his brother Larry.
Wow.
Which also brings up the fact that you worked on The Damn Irishman.
Yeah.
And Sebastian Maniscalco, the comedian, plays Joe Gallo.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that was wild. Yeah. Thank God for Al Pacino, man.
Dude, crazy. And then how about not even a movie, not even with Al Pacino, that's absolutely legendary Scorsese film, one of my favorites. You worked on The Departed, dude.
Yes, yeah.
What? Yes.
That was unbelievable. I was like, the first few weeks I was a nervous wreck, you know?
Well, dude, you have first of all, Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Like, he's in my top three all-time favorite actors ever. Like, yeah. That dude, some of my favorite, like, come on, The Shining and One of the Cuckoo's Nest. And, like,
yes.
The dude is incredible. So you have Nicholson, Matt Damon, Mark Wahlberg, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes.
The time that you're working with Vera, right? Didn't you work with her on something else?
Farmiga, yes. Vera, yeah. Well, you know, all those guys that you just named, they had their own makeup and hair teams.
Okay.
And some of the producers would lament. They'd say, we have more makeup and hair people on the call sheet than actors today.
Nice.
I'm like, I'm just the department head. I can't, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. But that's incredible, man. Just and there's a part of that movie that was filmed in Greenwood Cemetery as well.
Right. That's on right.
Warrior Path. I got it.
Yes.
Almost at the very end.
Right.
But Vera's walking away from Matt Damon. He's like, what about the baby? And she walks away. That's all Greenwood.
Right. That's right.
That's all Greenwood. And I found, like, I couldn't find, because there was, like, when I look up film locations, I knew it was in Greenwood. But I've driven around Greenwood. My mom is in Greenwood. But I've been there so many times. I mean, it's so big that one little path could be anywhere. You know? Right.
Yeah,
so I wound up asking, like, the security guard at the front gate. I'm like, do you have any idea where this is? And he's like, I'm not sure. And he's like, but there's a guy. I call him Frankie Tombstones because he works and he's like for 40 something years in the cemetery. So he's like, yeah, you know, he might be around. So we're driving and I see like a pickup truck and there's a guy sitting in it. He's just parked. He's not visiting anyone. So I'm like, maybe this might be the guy. So I was like, hey, you work here? He's like, yeah. I'm like, how well do you know the cemetery? He's like, well, I've been here for 40 something years. I'm like, ah. Oh. I'm like, are you Frank? He's like, yeah. He's like, well, he's the guy that coordinates anything that's filmed in the cemetery.
Right.
So I'm like, do you know where this is? He's like, oh, of course. He's like, follow me. He drove us all the way. I was nowhere near finding it. And he drove me there. I was like, holy shit, here it is. Here's the path. It's called Warrior Path.
Yeah. But isn't Greenwood, doesn't it go all the way, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't it go, like, all the way out to almost Forest Hills? It's, like, almost to, like,
It's giant. Not to Forest Hills, because it's in Brooklyn. But the highest point in Brooklyn is in Greenwood Cemetery as well.
Right. God, wow.
Yeah. It's a ridiculously beautiful cemetery.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill the Butcher is buried there.
Right, that's right.
There's some Albert Anastasia's there. There's so many people.
Wow.
Yeah, man. So The Departed, I mean, insane.
Departed.
Some of the things you've done, I mean, American Gangster. That's another place that I've been to that I've hit locations from that you worked on.
That's right. We were all over Harlem and everywhere. Yeah.
I didn't get anything from Harlem. I was out on Long Island at the old Westbury Gardens. Where they're shooting rifles off the back balcony.
Right, the mob guy and Denzel.
Yes, Armand Desante, who played the greatest John Gotti ever in the 96 movie, which that makes me mad because that was not filmed anywhere in New York. That was all filmed in Canada. That makes me mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can always tell, can't you? You can tell.
But they did very well. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe. And then, no, it's all like in Vancouver. I'm like, what? I'm like, and you watch, it's like, that looks like, you know, 23rd Street in Manhattan, but it's Vancouver.
Yeah. It's like, I see the Bronx Tale is a great movie, Bronx Tale, but it's shot in
Queens, Brooklyn.
Yeah. It's like, you know, if you're from the Bronx, you know, you kind of see that the buildings are a little different, you know, it's like.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I've hit several locations from there. And one right of them, Sheepshead Bay, like, okay.
Steinway Street, you know, it's like right. Yeah. Astoria. It's a story.
Yeah. It's Queens. Yeah. Nothing's in the Bronx at all. But yeah, I mean, The Departed, Dick Tracy, obviously. I mean, Jesus. I mean, you have Amistad, Chaplin, The Blob. I mean, I love that movie, the remake of The Blob from what was it, like 1988?
Yeah, around that time. Yeah
something like that. Year of the Dragon. Even something even way back is like one of my favorites. We're talking about horror. Like, you did Friday the 13th Part 2. Like,
yes. Yeah. I got to work with Carl Fullerton.
Yeah.
Who like spearheaded all that. Yeah. Yeah. That, I think that was like one of my first, besides Quest for Fire.
Back then. Which is incredible too. Like,
yeah, that's where I kind of learned how to, you know, really do prosthetics for films. Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable, Johnny.
Yeah. I've been very blessed, man. You know, I count my blessings, honestly. You know, it's been a great run, you know. Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man 2, Edge of Darkness, Salt with Angelina Jolie, 3:10 to Yuma, a couple episodes of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, man. Like, it's The Sopranos. It's incredible, dude. And it's really, as we're recording this isn't going to come out for a couple weeks probably. I have, like, one or two ahead. But, like, 2 days ago or 3 days ago, it was 24 years since The Sopranos aired their first episode. Where does time The time is insane.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's so weird. You know, it's just.
Yeah, I think it was the 10th. I think it was January 10th, 1999, I think.
Yeah. Crazy. It's so hard to get. It's so easy to get tripped out for me. You know, now, you know, it's like Dick Tracy was 1988 and it's 2023, right? 24? Where are we
23.
Now?
Yeah. It's scary.
Yeah. It's going fast, so let's just dig it, you know, while we got the time, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, Dick Tracy, there's not too many people to me that are cooler than William Forsythe. Like, I don't know. Like, I met William Forsythe at a horror convention. He was the coolest guy ever.
The coolest, man. He was perfect for Flat Top.
Yeah, Flat Top. Madonna? Madonna? In 1988? Come on.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's like the Bee Gees in 77. Come on.
Yeah. No, it was a good. Listen, man, that was everything about getting Dick Tracy was a miracle. So, you know, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Really great. Thank you. Thank God for Warren Beatty.
Yeah, man.
The guy that produces Avatar, the John Landau, who does all of Jim Cameron's films.
Yeah.
It was him and Richard Silbert that kept giving my name to Warren. You know, because I'd work with those guys in New York on the Cotton Club. Richard Silver was the production designer.
Okay.
And so when he was going to Dick, and some of the producers that were on the Cotton Club went to Dick Tracy. Barry Osborne co-produced the Cotton Club. And he said, there's this guy in New York, Caglio, does prosthetics. So it's funny how things kind of like connect.
Yeah, man.
So it was those guys that kind of introduced me to Warren in a roundabout way.
Wow.
So. Hey, we all got to get help from someone. No one makes it on their own. Nobody makes it on their own completely. It's not possible.
Of course not. But you're out there, and you have a skill, and people know you because of your profession that you're good at.
You're expected to bring something to the table. You know?
Of course.
And if you don't, you're fucked. And so that's that. You know,
right.
It goes for everybody and anything that you do.
Anything.
So. So you got to bring your game.
Yeah, you can't just sit there and think that things are going to happen for you. No, you got to put work in. And
you obviously
have been putting work in for decades.
And I continue to, man. I like every job I do even now. It's like, you know, my life depends on it. That's what I've always felt.
Yeah. Well, that's a good mentality to have.
There's no phoning in here. Like you, there's no phoning it in, you know?
Yeah.
You just go for it. Yeah.
What are you working on now? I know. Well, first of all, I know that you started up a whole online thing, and you have your own YouTube channel, and it's called the Makeup. What is it? Makeup Artist Workshop.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm really into now. Yeah.
That's kind of awesome, and
it's starting to really fly now. It's really starting to, you know, gain momentum, and we're excited. So it's like fun, and you know, I get to do makeups that I don't have to wait for the phone to ring to do.
Nice.
So I'm getting to create my own stuff and teach it, and people want to know about it. So,
yeah.
You know, we've got some cool students, And it's starting to, and now I'm going to go to the Savini School next week.
That's right. But before we press record, that's what we were talking about. I was like, hold on, let me just press record.
Yeah. So we're you know, that's going to parlay into Savini and their school down there. And it's just, it's nice. I'm really enjoying this, man.
Yeah, man.
As you know, should. Hopefully we create a new group of makeup people, you know, so that's the plan. If I get something cool, I can tap into some of my students, some of the people I know.
Yeah.
And then I'm training now and they can come and help me. So it's
of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like we were saying before I started recording, it's like, that's like the guy that was like that. He was my introduction of
Savini,
who does practical effects on like these on the original Friday the 13th and all these movies, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and all these movies that I'm watching. And I bought an issue of Fangoria. And it was right when the final chapter, Friday the 13th final chapter came out. And there was this whole big spread. And it was all about Savini. Savini is back and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, kind of like this guy is like the guy. And I had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of times. I have his phone number. I've texted him to do the podcast. He never gets back to me. But I was like, yeah, he gave me his phone number. I'm going to I even told him, like, you give me a number, I'm going to text you and ask you to come on. He's like, all right, man. He never gets back to me, but whatever. Well,
if I happen to see him down at the school next week, I swear to God, I'm not bullshit. I'll tell him we spoke, and you're looking for him.
Yeah, that guy is, man, he unbelievable. And I wound up going on eBay. Like, I had, like, an image of, it was the makeup from the first Jason that he did. And I met him a couple of times, and I always want to get, so I support, I buy something where it doesn't matter where. And the second, I didn't want another picture, so I went onto eBay, and I bought that same issue of Fangoria. And I had to sign that cover. So that's just something. Cool. It's just cool shit like that. But yeah, I would love to talk to that guy. You know who I really want to talk to? Your buddy Al. I don't even know what I would say to that guy, honestly.
That's an elusive guy, man.
I was only half joking, but I don't even know. If you were like, oh, yeah, sure, like Al will get in touch with you, and you told me, like, we exchanged.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know what I would say to him. I would feel like every single thing that I'm telling him, he'd be in his head like, okay, yeah, I've spoken about this 9,000 times. Oh, you want to talk about Dog Day Afternoon? You want to talk about Heat? Let me guess, you want to talk about Scarface next? Like, I would just feel like I'm just fucking it all up the whole time. I don't know. I'd be a mess.
Like all of us do with him, you know?
Yeah, I would be a mess, I think, talking with that guy.
Well, you'd be surprised. He's a really great person to deal with, and he's so down to earth, and he makes you relax, and that's why, you know, I've worked so well.
You told me that over pizza, how he's nice guy. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, man.
He helped me get sober, man. The guy was great.
Yeah, that's right.
Many years ago, you showed
a fellow sober human being with me. Yeah, me too, over 8 years.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Good for you. 20 for me.
That's awesome. I would have had more than 20 if it would have stuck the first time I tried to get sober.
No, well, hey, listen, if at first you don't succeed, try again, my friend.
Exactly. You know? I think the first time I legit tried was I was like 24. I'm 46. So I would have had 22 years under my belt.
Dude, it's right now. You know how it goes.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying. I'd never even calculated that until just now. But yeah.
Good for you.
It was October 1st was 8 years.
So. Oh, that's beautiful. Good for you.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
it's the best.
It really is.
It's the best. I tell people on my worst day now, it's 100 times better than my best day back then. You know, it's oh man, it's just like, you know, I welcome the shit.
Yeah,
to deal with. It's like fun.
Of course. Me too. It's like, bring it on. Like nothing. Afraid
of?
Yeah. Nothing phases me at all. I'm like, whatever. It is what it is, and whatever. Yeah. I'm so. I don't care. I'm not embarrassed about anything.
Hey, it took that to get to here. That's all good.
Yeah, man. Listen.
It had to happen.
If you would have told me 8-9 years ago that I'd be doing it and have the mindset that I have now and the things that I have now, and I would have thought you were crazy. I was like, there's no way. But, yeah, thank God.
Always.
Thank God, man.
Always, yes.
So are you working on anything now besides like your
the workshop, man? It's all about, you know, that. And it looks like I'm going to co-produce a picture with a friend of mine.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to produce this film. He wrote a really terrific script. And we met with an actress, a really cool, well-known actress the other day. And it looks like she's going to probably do it. And I'm talking to a friend of mine, a really great DP, to shoot it. So that's, you know, that's hopefully we'll start shooting in May.
Wow.
And it's that's a really awesome. Terrific script my buddy wrote. And it's really cool. So I'm excited about that. You know?
Wow. That's like new territory for you, no?
Kind of. Yeah. It's a whole new thing, but it's something I've been wanting to do for a while. And it's coming together. It's really amazing. It's almost like we can't stop it now.
That's awesome.
So I'm really excited about that. I'll tell you more about it off camera. You know?
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. I'll hold that because I want to hear it. And I won't tell anybody. You know me. I'm not going to say nothing. You know.
No, but it's exciting and it's coming together. It's beautiful.
And it's possibly in May?
Yeah, we'll start shooting in May in Maine.
In Maine?
Yeah.
Stephen King territory.
Yeah, we scattered locations a couple weeks ago. It's perfect. We locked the location, so it's, you know.
Oh, so it's happening.
Yeah, it looks like it's all falling into place. It's like it's like taking on a life of its own.
Beautiful.
So it's good. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I wish you nothing but the best, man. You
thanks,
know.
Thanks, man.
Of course.
Thank you.
Of course.
And you too.
Thank you. I just do my thing. I go to work. I do my thing. I come home. I talk to somebody every once in a while. And then and then I go back and I start looking for locations and shit. And then I go to bed and I do it all over. It keeps me content. I'm a creature of habit, you know, when it comes to certain things. So I get out there and I'm running around and, you know, I'm in traffic, but I have to go and try to line up this corner where some dude was. It's crazy. You know, like some. Awesome. Yeah. It's, but I learn things all the time. Like the other day, like I have a list in my phone of photos and different things that I still need to get to. And those, but then like that list, like I'll hit a whole bunch of them, but then I'll have like 40 more so the list just keeps growing and growing, even though I keep on going to places because I'll look. I go down these rabbit holes and then I wind up in this other place and this other place. And I'm like I just learned for the first time, literally last night. I don't know how I got to it. I was looking up old school, like mafia shit. And I wound up in this thing that I never even knew happened. It's called the Adonis Club incident. And on Christmas Day, 1925, on a specific street here in Brooklyn that I pass by all the time, there was this social club and it was owned by Irish gangsters back in the 20s. But at the time, Al Capone was in Chicago, but he came back to New York because Al Capone was originally from Brooklyn and he brought his son to get surgery. But Al Capone found out this ins and the outs that there was like a beef happening. So Al Capone and his friend had a whole bunch of people killed in this place in Brooklyn that I pass all the time. I'm like, I had no idea about this. And now there's a Comfort Inn hotel where it was, but the house right next door is the same exact house. It's still there right next door. So I can get the shot exactly and line up like the windows to this house and like, I never knew that happened, but I'm fascinated with that old, especially that old timey New York way back in the day kind of true crime stuff and the photographs that came out of all that stuff. And like over the weekend, I will go there and you know what I mean? So I find stuff all the time because I'm always looking to explore and learn new things. So.
Dude, there's a book in this, man. That's a good tabletop book.
Yeah, you know, that's been a thought that was being tossed around with a few of us.
Yeah, I mean, the way you frame the shots and you superimpose the real frame of the film with there's a book there, man.
Yeah, a lot of people say that.
Yeah, that's interesting. People like to see that stuff.
Yeah, and they it's really like do. A lot of people don't even know that exists. Like, you know, like I'll show people, I'm like, all right, you look at this and you see like this is the screenshot from the movie and the surrounding picture is what I took. And you see how this is, and they're like, wow, like that's awesome work. Like, I'm like, yeah, it's just cool. And there's several of us.
Yeah. You did that for Saturday Night Fever, didn't you? Didn't you go around?
I did several.
Yeah, that was cool. That was really
several different Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one shot, like people must look at me like I'm crazy, where there's a part in the movie where John Travolta is walking into his house and it's a crane shot. It's shot from really high. So if I'm standing on the street, I can't get it. So there's one day I'm double parked. At the time I had my Explorer and I'm standing on my roof of my Explorer, even on my tippy toes with my arms all the way up in the air, trying to get like the right angle. People must have been like, what is this guy doing? I'm like, what? 35 years ago, John Travolta was here. What do you mean? What am I doing?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I do that shit all the time. People must think I'm nuts, but whatever. And then I'll be taking a picture of like a window of a building. And people will be looking at me, but it's like, no, well, that's where, I don't know, Johnny Depp was. That's like down the street where Johnny Depp is walking with Al Pacino and Donnie Brasco on camera.
Right.
It's like, obviously taking a picture. People will just think I'm taking a picture of nothing, but no.
Right.
I could line this shot up perfect. This is where they were. So.
Right. That's cool, man. That's fun. That's a book.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an idea floating around the ether. Yeah.
You got to do it.
Yeah, if it happens, I'll give you a copy on me.
All right, beautiful. Signed.
Yeah, of course.
You better.
Of course I will. You know that. Yeah, man. So, yeah, as always, listen, we've been having, like, what do they call it? Is it an Indian summer? What is it when it's a warm winter?
Yeah, I guess.
That's what it is?
What is it? Yeah, it's something.
Something. Yeah, it's like, why is it 60 degrees today? It's the middle of January. It's weird.
Yeah, but the Farmer's Almanac was, it's going to be a mild winter. They've been right so far. It's been great.
Listen, thank God. I'm not complaining about it at all.
Yeah, a little snow's fine, but no.
A little bit, but don't destroy and shut down the city. I can't. I don't want to dig out. I'm tired of digging my car out. I can't. People are fighting each other for parking spot. I can't. I have no time for that. But my whole point of bringing that up is sooner rather than later, we definitely got to meet up somewhere. I don't care. We'll come out to you. Maybe we'll go out to another restaurant somewhere.
We love it, Jimmy.
Maybe we'll go somewhere different.
Well, you and Nikki are always welcome. So
I appreciate that. Well, like I said before, she sends her regards. She says hi to Helen, and she can't wait to see
her. Ours back too. She's awesome. Lovely. The two of you.
Thank you, sir. And as are you both. But now, I have to do it because I didn't bring it up. And I know that some people are going to want to be like, well, you didn't ask about Heath Ledger's Joker makeup in The Dark Knight.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Now, first of all, how you didn't win the award for that is beyond me. But that's
there. What are you going to do?
It's iconic, man.
He won it. He won that night.
He did. He did.
And That's great.
There you go. He did win it. But you did the Joker makeup on Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight.
We were up against Benjamin Button. I mean, you know, that's like a big makeup job, you know? It's like, it's like all this makeup on Brad Pitt and everybody. It's like, you know.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, well.
Don't sell yourself short.
I'm not actually. I was just going to say that a good friend of mine, very close friend, said, John, no one's going to remember Benjamin Button. They're always going to remember the iconic Joker makeup.
And he's right.
And I'm not. It's what I've heard over the years from many people.
Because you mentioned Benjamin Button and Brad Pitt. I cannot picture what that looks like in my head.
He gets from old to young. He's from old and he becomes young.
I have nothing in my brain that's firing off and giving me that image. But
well, you see, that's the thing. That's what you're talking about. It's like you say The Dark Knight, the Joker, people instantly see
100%
that image. So that's, and Heath made it what it was. And I helped. It was great.
That's your handiwork.
We worked well together. It was a good combo.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Awesome. Iconic shit, man. Legends. You worked with legends. You're a legend yourself. And you're like a bread and butter guy. It's awesome.
Well, just doing what I'm supposed to be doing over here.
I hear you.
To the best of my ability, just like you.
That's it. I guess I just come on here and I
end of story.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. It's just that simple, man.
It is. It really is. Now, if you don't mind, I do have to throw out a couple of my sponsors real quick.
Please.
Do
I get any free coffee?
Yes.
Okay, great.
There it is.
I'm sorry.
Dead Sled Coffee is a sponsor of Mission Statements as well as my old one. Awesome. So there was carry over there from my friend Mike.
Hello, we're getting some free coffee.
Yes. I'll hook you right up. Dead Sled Coffee. Everybody, follow them on Instagram at Dead Sled Coffee. If you go to deadsledcoffee.com and you put in promo code Delta Bravo, you will automatically get 20% off of your order. And if you are watching this or listening and you're into horror movies and especially like and music and stuff, they have officially licensed coffee from like they have a Robert Englund blend, they have a Kane Hodder blend, they have a Rob Zombie blend, they have an Elvira blend, they have they have so much stuff, and it's all officially it from, you know, the Stephen King's it. They have officially licensed and they're legally allowed to use these things for their coffee. And they're a small company from Pennsylvania, and they do really, really, really cool stuff. And they have, every kind of coffee, whether it's little breakfast blends or espressos. They even have cold brew. They have different kinds of tea. They have all kinds of stuff. So Dead Sled Coffee on Instagram and deadsledcoffee.com to order stuff. Also, new sponsor, well, not a new sponsor, but a sponsor for this podcast is Main Street Jukebox, who are also, they're in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. The guy, Tom, who owns the place, is a Delta Bravo Explorer as well. You follow them on Instagram at Main Street Jukebox, M-A-I-N-S-T Jukebox. They're an old school record store who's been around since 1994. They reopened once because of a huge fire, but they've made it through the whole COVID thing. They've been there since 94, like I said, and there's also MainStreetJukebox.com. It's a small, independent, family-run local business. So instead of always just going, if you're in the area, instead of just going onto iTunes and buying it, go and get yourself a record. Go get yourself stuff like that. They have books and toys and stuff like that too, but small businesses, Main Street Jukebox. And then last but definitely not least, my friend Kevin Bednarz, who actually is the guy that gave me the name to drop in order to get onto the Waco compound, because he was there 3 weeks before I was there and told me that it was insane. But Kevin Bednarz lives in Virginia and he owns three pubs, but you don't have to drink there. There's the Percival Pub, the Ashburn Pub, and Percival Eats. They're all on Instagram. And if you're in the Virginia area, go check it out. He's cool. A great guy. He's a super talented artist. And he's like one of us. He's a down-to-earth, really good dude who owns three successful pubs/restaurants. And if you're in the area, tell him I sent you and go grab yourself. If you drink, grab yourself a beer. Have one from me. And, go get yourself a burger or something. So there you go.
Wow. Look at you, man.
Yeah, they're all friends. They're all just friends. I don't make anything off of this. They're just friends. We help each other and we just get the word out for each other, and that's it. That's all. That's no big. I'm not paying any bills by doing this. I do this because, just like my last podcast, I genuinely enjoy talking with people that I'm interested in
working. Yeah, man. No, you're a beautiful person. You helped me with all my t-shirts and all the designs, and you did it for free. You did it. You just gave it.
Yeah, I'm not taking money from you, dude.
You know, it's karma, and you got a great karma around you. Your karmic propensity is stellar.
I'll be wide open and honest to you. I wouldn't take a dime from you. It was enjoyable for me to do that because, one, I never thought that I would be doing this for somebody that has done the work that you've done and the films that I've enjoyed you that you've worked on. That's number one. You're an Academy Award winner. That's just cool to me to be able to do something for you. I'm not taking a dime of your money. You know, we go to eat pizza. I don't care about the bill. I don't care. I want to break bread and just to have Spumoni Gardens and shoot the shit with you and eat some broccoli Rob. That's good enough for me.
That's beautiful.
That's good enough for me, dude.
God bless you.
For real.
God bless you, Jimmy. God bless you, man. Your beautiful artwork. You really helped me out big time. And you're a stand-up guy. You know,
anytime you need anything, just let me know and I got you, buddy.
Thank you for having me here tonight. Thank you, man. It's good to see your face.
Yeah, well, I figured there's crossover. Like this, the whole thing was based on, the podcast was based on having people that do this whole urban exploration stuff. But like, I had Darren Dalton, who played Randy, one of the Sochas from The Outsiders, on last. And, you know, so, but this, the reason why this connection there, because there's, first of all, you're, the pop culture that you're involved in and had a hand in plays a huge part in this whole Delta Bravo thing, this whole pop culture thing. The movies, I've been to several locations that you've worked on those movies. Other people that I that have been to your, so there's it all.
It's a connection.
There's all connections there, so there's no reason why I wouldn't want to talk to you again, either on the podcast or even off it.
All right, beautiful. Well, that's music to my ears, man.
Yeah, buddy.
You know, Jimmy, you're great. Good friends, man.
Absolutely.
You know, for all your help and everything, man. You know,
don't even thank me anymore. It's fine. It's all good. That's what friends do.
You're a good man. Very lucky to know you. Very lucky.
Same here, my man. Listen, we will definitely be in touch. We'll make plans to go do something. And
all right. Look forward to it.
Nothing but the best.
Always back at you.
Yes. I'm gonna shut this off, but I'm not gonna be recording, but I want to talk to you about what you're gonna do.
Okay, cool.
Be good, buddy.
You too, Jimmy. Thanks for everything, man.
Hey, buddy.
Thank you.
Anytime.